Okay, I just hate usurping authority. And Dan likes to. Do you want that?
Come on, Randy. Enjoy your last days as council president.
It's true.
You can do some budget modifications.
Okay.
The idea, right?
Yeah.
Council, come to order and please call the roll.
Fish.
Here.
Gossman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Adams, the mayor is momentarily delayed. He'll be here any minute. If we could start with communications, please, Sue.
Item 585, request of Michelle J. Fiasca to address council regarding seniors homing together.
Michelle?
I've never done this before.
So just hand those to the clerk, please.
Oh.
Pull up a chair right in front of the mic.
Okay.
And take a deep breath, blow out slowly.
And dive in.
And just give us your first and last name, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Michelle Fiasca, and I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to share my vision. I have been in the senior housing industry for the last 14 years, and I realize with budgetary cuts in government that there are problems and issues with providing affordable housing for our seniors now, let alone the 10,000 boomers who are turning 65 every day for the next 18 years. So, what if there was an opportunity where actually boomers and seniors could be, create an opportunity for them to be empowered to find their own living situations that cost the government nothing. And that's what Seniors Homing Together is, and this is how it works. We launched our website, www.seniorshomingtogether, a year ago, June. And what it is boomers who have homes go online and match themselves with boomers who are looking for affordable housing. And so we looked at it as a financial benefit to begin with, but we also see that there are other benefits besides. Isolation and depression are big issues for seniors living alone. Seniors and boomers don't have to work till they drop, and they don't have to live with their kids. They can match themselves any way they choose to, whether they are looking for like-minded seniors who enjoy doing the same things they do, or maybe they want to match themselves with people who have varied skill sets. For example, maybe somebody enjoys cooking, somebody likes to do yard work, somebody else can still do home repairs. So the idea is it's a way for our boomers and seniors to be able to hang on to their homes and also match themselves with boomers and seniors who are looking at retiring on a Social Security income. So my invitation to you today is to look through the materials that I've given you. Go on our website at www.seniorshomingtogether.com. And friend us on Facebook and contact me with the information on the back of the business card to give us ideas on how we can share the word. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
And may I leave these extra
please
packets for other people?
Thank you. Item 586.
Request of Mike O'Callaghan to address council regarding homelessness, shelterlessness, Seattle Solution, and permit camping.
Mike?
Hi.
Good morning.
I have done this before.
I've done this before, but I've never seen you dressed for a banker's interview. My goodness, no, what happened?
You like it?
I do like it. Very impressive. Very impressive.
Okay.
You look very nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think basically a lot of it is costuming, and it's good to be able to do a variety of costumes.
I don't know whether to welcome you or ask you for a loan.
All right, sure. Just leave me alone, huh?
No problem.
Okay, anyway, for those who don't know, I advocate for those without shelter. Probably about between 2,000 to 5,000 people in this city are living outside. I am not safe. They are not safe. We are not safe. I've had police enter private property that I've owned 6 times in the last month with no probable cause. I am not safe. we are not safe. The 7-year plan, a 10-year plan to end homelessness is 7 years into it, no dent, really. Okay, and I'm not homeless, I'm shelterless, okay? We have nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. The anti-camping ordinance allows illegal theft of our property without due process of law. Unfortunate. We have nowhere to go. Your laws make all of us criminals. We are criminals, subject to police harassment at any time. This is the first article of the Oregon Constitution. ... Governments are founded on their authority and are instituted for their, i.e. the people's, peace, safety, and happiness. We are not at peace. We are not safe. They are not safe. We are not happy. It is inappropriate of this governmental body to ignore the needs of these people. GorillaLove.org, the mayor of Nevada City, lined up 140 people and they built 40 shelters on wheels, just like you saw I had out there. Different design, same thing, check it out. In Seattle, they have 3 self-governing places with 100 people in each one. Come on, let's do something. I realize it's out of all of your bailiwicks. You know, and in this council, everybody gets to distribute. But the mayor of Nevada City got volunteers together because they saw government funding is being cut back. That channel isn't going to be available for solutions. And I thank you for listening.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. That gets us through communications. Is that right?
Yep.
So we have a special presentation this morning. And what is the run of show? Where's a member of my staff? Do I read the presentation first? Is Sarah here?
Yeah.
Hi, Sarah. How do you want to do this? Do you want to have a... you're doing some performance, right? You're not doing a performance. Okay, please come forward, Sarah. I apologize.
I dared them.
Yeah. Well, let me read this proclamation. Well, actually, please sit down.
Want me to sit?
Yeah, please sit and introduce yourself, if you would. And tell us a little bit about Northwest Dance Project.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sarah Slipper, the Artistic Director of the Northwest Dance Project. It is a real pleasure and honor for us to be here today. Thank you, Sam. I want to just mention that the company has just got back from an international performance in Hanover, Germany, and last month, and a big 25th International Choreographic Festival there, biggest in Europe. And we were the only U.S. company to dance there. And we won the audience prize, which was a huge honor for us. And we represented Portland extremely well. The company is made up of 10 dancers. We do all original, work made specifically for us. And since 2004, we have over 100 works in the repertoire from choreographers from around the world and also nationally and locally. So it's a real honor to be based here in Portland. We love Portland, and we hope we're going to be more cultural ambassadors for you in the future.
We would like that, and it is my honor to proclaim the following. Whereas Sarah Slipper, an award-winning choreographer and artistic director of the Northwest Dance Project, founded the Contemporary Ballet Company in Portland in 2004 with a dedication to the creation and performance of bold new dance works, and whereas inspired. New dance works crafted and performed in Portland enrich the city and further Portland's reputation as a destination point for dance and the arts. And whereas many of the world's most accomplished and talented choreographers have come to the Northwest Dance Project to create more than 100 new works with complete artistic freedom, and whereas Andrea Parson, a leading dancer in Northwest Dance Project's talented company, is a current Princess Grace Award holder, and whereas the Northwest Dance Project was the only U.S. dance company selected to perform at the most recent 25th annual Hanover Choreographic Festival in Germany, one of the largest and most prestigious dance events in Europe, and whereas Northwest Dance Project's performance at the festival won the coveted Audience Award, now therefore I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim today, June 15th, 2011, to be Day of Recognition for the Northwest Dance Project. Congratulations.
Mayor Adams, the next item is going to be on the summer free-for-all. Okay. And since Northwest Dance Project's here, why don't we also put a plug on for the Washington Park Summer Festival, Friday, August 12th, the Northwest Dance Project and the Blue Cranes performing in Washington Park free. So we hope everyone can come out and celebrate.
That's fantastic. Thank you for being here. We're very proud of you. You do not have to stay, though. We will not be offended if you all just get up now and go. Or if you want to watch democracy happen, you're welcome to do that, too.
They have class at 10.
Well, you better get out of here, then. Thanks for being here. Thank you for being here. We'll now consider the consent agenda item. Does anyone have anything to pull from the consent agenda?
I'd like to hold 602 to the end. I just have a technical question that my staff are working on.
602, okay. 602 has been pulled to be considered later. All right. Sue, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Just fine. Thanks.
Can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fish.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard. Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read time certain presentation, item number 587.
Summer free for all sponsorship.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to invite Zeri Santner, Director of Portland Parks and Rec, Dave Wiedrich from our friends at Daimler, and Nick Hardig, the new Executive Director of the Portland Parks Foundation, to come forward. And I have a couple of brief introductory remarks. Today is the first day of summer for most students in Portland. To the children on free and reduced lunch, this presents a serious problem. One less healthy meal a day. For the past 100 years, Portland Parks and Rec has run a very popular and well-attended playground program. This program offers young people throughout the city healthy and supervised activity during the summer, and last year we served over 80,000 healthy meals. The playground program is part of what we call Summer Free For All. This year's lineup includes movies, neighborhood concerts, the playground program, and the Washington Park Summer Festival. And here's the great part. It's all free. It takes nearly $1 million to run these programs, about $600,000 in public and private support, and the rest in-kind contributions. And here's the great news. For every dollar of public investment, we're able to leverage over $4 of private investment. And today, we're here to thank our partners. Joining us today are two of our best, Daimler and the Portland Parks Foundation. We're thrilled to have Daimler back as the lead sponsor for the Washington Park Summer Festival. They literally rescued this festival a couple years ago, and they continue to step up and underwrite it. Frankly, without good corporate citizens like Daimler, there would be no summer free-for-all. Dave, we can't thank you enough for your leadership. And I also want to acknowledge some of our other major partners that make the summer free-for-all go. And Mayor, if I may, I'll just mention them briefly. Again, the Portland Parks Foundation, Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon, Comcast, Clear Channel, Cricket, the Gordon Sondland and Katie Durant Foundation, the Children's Hospital at Legacy Emanuel, National Recreation and Park Association, In Focus, Whole Foods, Safeway, the Oregonian, Multnomah County, Pacific Power, Northwest Natural, Key Bank, the list goes on and on. So I'd like to welcome our guests, and Zeri, are you going to tee it up first? So first, the distinguished director of Portland Parks and Rec, Zeri Santner. Zeri, thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the Council. Zeri Santner, Director of Parks and Recreation. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, we're here today to request that you join us in acknowledging many Portlanders who have contributed to continue this very, very successful programs. These contributors include individuals, neighborhood associations, businesses large and small, and then we have the stars here that are Daimler as well as the Portland Parks Foundation. Just want to take a few minutes to explain what the Summer Free for All is. We have a variety of activities throughout our system that are free hours for swimming, variety of activities. But the highlights and the centerpieces of this program are three. One is our summer playground program. As Commissioner mentioned, this is over 100 years old, and it provides constructive and structured and supervised activities in 23 of our parks in a very safe environment for children to engage in. This program last year was provided in 23 parks and will continue again this year. $162,000 was raised this year to fund that program. And in some of the sites where the need is the greatest, we provide free lunches. And we are very, very pleased that we have this year Park Rose, David Douglas, and Centennial School have joined us in providing those free lunches. Last year, we served nearly 80,000 free lunch, and we expect that to increase to about 100,000. The next most popular program are movies and concerts in our parks. And many individuals, community members, neighborhood associations, small businesses sponsor these programs. Movies in the park, when we started in 2007, we had 13 movies throughout summer. That program has expanded to 47. It's one of the largest movies in the park program in the nation. And the concerts are very much loved in our neighborhood parks. It draws families, neighbors to come together and hear the local talents that are performing in these programs. And then obviously the centerpiece of the program is the Summer Festival in Washington Park. This year, again, it's coming back for a 10-day event, and it draws top-notch performers, as you learned today. Northwest Dance Program will be performing there. And we couldn't do that without the premier sponsor, Daimler. I want to thank Dave Wiedrich for his personal interest in and enthusiasm for this program, and I'd like to invite him to say a few words.
Dave, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Zeri. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, our President and CEO, Martin Dahm, could not be here today, but he sends his regards. It's very important for him and certainly all of us at Daimler Trucks North America to support the communities in which we have operations, and certainly with a headquarters and one of our manufacturing operations right here in Portland, it's, of course, a significant operation. The attitude here is that by having this being our sixth year of support, it's certainly a very strong relationship that we have. Many thanks to Commissioner Fish for his continuing attitude toward this partnership, and that is indeed what it is, a partnership. Although there's been some changes recently and some coming up, the relationship is quite strong, and it has to do with the leadership from Commissioner Fish and certainly all of his parks team. That is something that we just simply continue along this year in spite of the changes. One thing I'd like to mention very briefly, if I could, many of you probably know that Daimler Trucks North America, we have the brands of Freightliner trucks, Western Star trucks, and Thomas Built buses. And, of course, we love all our children the same. Last year, if you remember, Commissioner Fish was quite involved with our Starlight Parade float, walked with us. He wore his Freightliner cap that I gave to him, and there might be another one in his future here.
And that vehicle was powered by?
That was a compressed natural gas Freightliner, and very appropriate, of course, for a park environment. With the more recent news you may have heard last week, the business is doing reasonably well, and we're hiring in our operations, and over 150 jobs will be coming to our manufacturing facility down on Swan Island. And that happens to be where we build our Western Star product. Western Star is the very high-end luxury line and the extreme duty brand for the family. And I'm hoping to have a Western Star on display at one of the performances at Washington Park this year. So again, thank you for this recognition. If I might, like to give Commissioner Fish a new hat. He has been quite the ambassador for the Freightliner brand last year, and as I said, we love our children the same. So this year, I'd like him to accept a Western Star hat, and hopefully, he'll accept this new position.
Thank you very much. Well, we couldn't do it without you, and Daimler, we're thrilled that you're adding new jobs, and we're honored that you're headquartered here in Portland. Mayor and colleagues, next I want to introduce Nick Hardick. Nick is the new executive director of the Portland Parks Foundation. They had a national search recently. He was selected from an outstanding group of finalists. He's relocated from Alaska, and he's ready to take the reins of the foundation, which under the 2020 plan is our partner in all of the fundraising and work that we do. So this is Nick's first official appearance before council, so welcome.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Fish. Mr. Mayor and commissioners, it's really an honor to be here, and it's an honor to serve the Portland Parks Foundation. For 10 years, we've been pleased to be the nonprofit funder, fundraiser partner for Portland Parks and Recreation. And as you all know, government can't do it all. And Portland Parks and Recreation can't do it all. There's continuing pressure on the budget and the need for new solutions. And we're very pleased to help provide some of those solutions, especially when we can raise money for an important program like Summer Free for All. So this is our continuing lead sponsorship. And we hope it continues for many years into the future. That, along with the other services that we provide, will only get stronger in Portland's future. So thank you very much. Thank you to Dave and Daimler. And thank you also to Zeri and Portland Parks and Recreation for their excellence. We hope that this role just grows and that the support for affordable or free programs for all of Portland's citizens will continue. Thank you.
Nick, thanks very much. While you're still here, if I could just make a couple other remarks. First, anyone watching that wants to see what the full schedule is, they can go to portlandparks.org, and we've listed the complete schedule. We also have a paper version, which you'll find in your Oregonian, and we also have here. And Mayor, we're very pleased to also co-brand with Sunday Parkways.
Yeah.
And Tom Miller made us do this, but we're actually very pleased to do this. And we like the collaboration. Portlandparks.org is where you can go to get daily information about free activities system-wide. I also want to, though, mention that there was some public support that leveraged a lot of private support. But I want to thank the mayor and my colleagues for the public support they gave us. And, in fact, over the last 2 years, the mayor has shifted, I believe the figure is close to $150,000, into ongoing funding because of his commitment to sustain the playground program and his particular interest in making sure there was a meal program attached to the playground program. And he's given us additional funds to make sure there's no gap between the end of our program and the beginning of the school year. That is the strong support we enjoy from the mayor and my colleagues, and we thank you for that. There's a lot of other people working behind the scenes to make this happen. This is an enormous undertaking with the amount of money we have to raise, logistics, signing up talent. I want to thank Emily Hicks in particular in my office and Natalie Sept. I want to thank Karen Loper, Jeff Milkus, Kelly Torres-Walker, Matt Sinclair, who's our new head of community partnerships, and the whole team that's been working tirelessly at the Bureau to make this happen. We believe that this platform of Summer Free For All is important in good times. We believe it's vital during tough times. And we're very proud to be the host of tens of thousands of families summer-wide. And one other detail, as part of our Healthy Portland initiative, you will begin to see with greater frequency healthy options for eating at our events. And that starts at the Washington Park Summer Festival, where there's a vendor that provides healthy food. So we're trying to put our values into action through our programs. Thanks to everybody who makes this happen. And Mayor, thank you and Council for your strong support.
You got it. Thank you for your great leadership. Welcome aboard.
Yep.
When is your last day?
July 1.
July 1. Well, we're going to miss you. Thank you for all your work, all your leadership. It's truly amazing. And thank you for adding jobs. Thank you also for hosting a group of us that went back to the headquarters in Germany to make sure that they knew. We really appreciate the presence of Daimler here.
Sounds like it was a very successful trip.
It was. So thank you for being such a good civic partner on everything.
Welcome.
All done.
Great. We will now move to, can you please read the report, title for the report, time certain, right on time, 588.
Accept the 2010 annual report of the City Auditor's Independent Police Review Division.
Auditor, oh, hi, Ms. Batista.
How are you?
Auditor Griffin Ballet. Director Batista, welcome.
Thank you. Okay. I'm Mary Beth Baptista, and I'm the director of Portland City Auditor's Independent Police Review Division, IPR. Auditor LaVon Griffin-Belade is here today, but she's asked me to do the introduction to the report. IPR is an impartial oversight agency under the authority of the independently elected city auditor. IPR was created in 2002 to improve police accountability, promote higher standards of police services, and increase public confidence. IPR has five main responsibilities. The first is to receive community members' complaints and commendations about Portland police officers. Second, to conduct or oversee administrative investigations of the police officers charged with misconduct. We issue periodic reports about complaints and investigations and recommend policy changes to reduce complaints of misconduct. We also observe and participate in investigations of officer-involved shootings and in-custody deaths, and hire experts to review closed investigations and report on policy and quality of investigation issues. We also coordinate appeals filed by community members and officers who are dissatisfied with the outcome of their investigations. Additionally, IPR conducts outreach to hear community concerns and build community trust. We conduct annual recruitment for the membership of the Citizen Review Committee, the CRC, and provide administrative and technical support to the CRC. We also coordinate mediations between community members and officers. Before you today is IPR's eighth annual report. It details complaint and intake processing data for 2010. I'm joined by Derek Ranke, IPR's Senior Management Analyst, and he will discuss the data associated with IPR and IA case handling. This report also details the work and the accomplishment of the Citizen Review Committee, and will provide some highlights of those efforts. This report also discusses some major policy and program changes, including, and perhaps most significantly, the changes to IPR's governing ordinance that Council unanimously passed in March of 2010. These revisions substantially increase IPR's oversight authority and increase transparency in Portland police accountability process. The revised ordinance that was passed in 2010 strengthened IPR's oversight in three main areas. One, it increased IPR's authority to conduct administrative investigations. It increased IPR's role in administrative investigations conducted by the police bureau, and it established a more balanced and transparent police review board to recommend investigative findings and discipline to the chief of police. Significant strides were also made by the IPR community outreach coordinator, Irene Conniff, who is on a well-deserved vacation today, and so she can't be here with us. She worked throughout the year to build positive relationships with the public and help them understand IPR's role in the complaint and commendation process. She coordinated outreach activities with the Citizen Review Committee members, developed a cultural competency training and ongoing education for IPR staff, and engaged community members and leaders one-on-one. Feedback that she received from that outreach included asking IPR to reduce barriers that community members feel when filing a complaint. So in response, IPR has changed their procedures, and she and our investigators have traveled to various places within the community to interview witnesses and complainants not forcing them to come downtown, which is often uncomfortable or impossible for some community members. In closing, before I turn it over to Mr. Ranke, I want to point out that when I took the director's position in 2008, a major community concern was that IPR did not release timely annual reports on a regular basis. And when released, IPR did not routinely present those reports to council. We responded to those concerns immediately and promptly corrected the problem. In the last 3 years, we've released 4 years' worth of data and have presented each of those reports to this body. Further, in the past 3 years, annual reports were released by May of the following year. I want to acknowledge the hard work of Derek Ranke, who compiled all of the data for this report, and the hard work of all of the CRC, the IPR staff that had a hand in putting this report together, as well as former Chair Michael Bigham, who contributed to the section covering CRC and its accomplishments. And now I will turn it over to Derek to give you an overview of the data presented.
Okay. So I'm Derek Ranke. You heard that a couple times by now, but analyst with the Auditor's Independent Police Review Division. Happy to be here to talk about the division's annual report for calendar year 2010, which we released just late last month. As Mary Beth mentioned, a major event in 2010 for IPR was the ordinance change last March. That change also led to some slight changes in my job in how we present the data and account for the data in our annual reporting. That's mostly true in the complaint categories, where the focus has shifted away a little bit from where a case initiates to who was affected by the or involved with the behavior. So, for example, you'll see less distinction this year between bureau-initiated, citizen-initiated, and especially cases that are initiated based on some kind of a tort review. And that's largely because our authority is so similar now, and a complainant's rights, for example, to appeal to the CRC are much more similar now than they were in previous years. Just in terms of overall numbers, IPR opened 385 community complaints in 2010. That's about 5% fewer than the year before. Rude behavior continues to be the most common allegation by quite some margin. IPR referred 30% of the cases across the street to Internal Affairs. IPR dismissed about two-thirds of the cases that come into the system. But there are ways in which those cases still inform the overall oversight system and the police bureau. For example, IPR sent one out of every six dismissals to a precinct for their attention. And complaints are still tracked in our database, so the general trends within particular areas can be tracked, and also officers' histories can still account for cases. Even if they've been dismissed, it would show on an officer's history for up to 3 years. So even dismissals can still become a body of evidence that we do some changes with. IPR also this year added a more distinct category to better track the dismissal code of no misconduct or no misconduct likely. Internal Affairs relies on the service improvement opportunity process to resolve about half of the complaints that IPR refers to it, especially the complaints of the nature of rude behavior. A CRC work group found that a sample of those case handling decisions were valid in the report that they just issued this spring. In the area of use of force, overall there were 42 complaints that had allegations of violations of the police bureau's use of force policies. That's more than a 50% drop of force complaints since 2006. Four investigations that were completed in 2010 contained some kind of sustained allegation of a force allegation. There was also an increase, a well-documented and publicized increase in officer-involved shootings in 2010 to 6. In the area of discipline, there were three officers that were terminated in 2010. Five resigned or retired with an investigation pending, and 14 were suspended without pay. And then one of the last areas that I'll cover is timeliness. Right now we're in the final stages of preparing an additional report that I've been working on that focuses specifically on case timeliness and on the investigations, which take the longest to go through the system. On page 33 of the annual report, you will see some of the new ways that we're beginning to look at that kind of data with an eye towards improvement. So, for example, measures are stated now in terms of median days at each stage, and that all case types are now included. And so when I review those measures, I see some improvement. For example, the median days for Internal Affairs investigation has been around 120 days for about a five-year stretch from 03 to 08, but that's been closer to 80 days for the last 2 years, so I think that's improvement. Also, the median number of days for a full investigation process dropped to under 250 days for the first time since 03. but I think overall performance is still shy of expectations. As you'll note, that's still 8 months for an investigation, and that's just the median or midpoint, so half the cases are taking longer than that. The timeliness study goes on to recommend specific steps to address time lags, including more detailed tracking of cases. From time to time, there were incidences where cases stalled when they left IPR or Internal Affairs, for example, the Detectives Division, or possibly waiting a separate training analysis. At times, it was hard for us to tell if a case was at a commander for findings or with that commander's branch chief, where those findings get reviewed. So when we release this timeliness study, and this is within the next couple weeks, we're very close, we'll be able to work with the Police Bureau and stakeholders to readdress the benchmarks and targets moving forward.
And thank you, Derek. And now we are joined with Jeff Bisnett, CRC member and recorder. Yeah. And recorder. They just did elections while I was gone. So, and he's here to discuss the CRC accomplishments in 2010.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette. I am a member of the Citizens Review Committee and am the recorder, which means I'm sort of third in line for succession, and our chair wasn't able to be here, our vice chair wasn't able to be here, and so you're kind of getting your third string. We're pleased to be part of the annual report. It was a busy year for the CRC. I think the a couple of things I just want to take note of is we really tried to amp up our outreach function, which is a key part of our responsibility, and a central part of that was starting up regular community forums to basically open up the doors and let the community come in and tell us what they're thinking about, what they're concerned about, what they're happy about, their experiences with police services in the city. Also focused a lot on the training aspect within the Bureau. Do want to express appreciation again for both the Bureau and IPR putting together a very thorough, very useful multi-week training session about all sorts of different aspects of the training that our police officers get. I hope I know that was the first time we've done that. Hopefully it will not be the last. I will note that the CRC is moving on to looking at some recruitment and retention issues this year, and we see that as directly connected to some of those training issues. And so you'll be hearing more about that probably the next annual report. Finally, I'll just note that the CRC did release a number of reports, not the least of which was the structure review report, the PARC, or Police Assessment Resource Center reports, and also took part in the stakeholder review process that this council set up. And there's a lot of information, a lot of recommendations that are sort of awaiting action, frankly, either by the Bureau or by this council, particularly the stakeholders report that was convened after the passage of the IPR ordinance back in March or April of last year. And each of the committee members have been tasked to liaison with council members to kind of underscore what recommend, or to one, urge you to take up some sort of work group process to deal with those stakeholder recommendations, and also to underscore our priorities. So you'll be hearing from committee members soon about that if you haven't already. With that, that concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to take questions.
All right. Well, just to speak to that. Oh, I'm sorry.
For here.
We've been, before we had these recommendations, we had the request from the Albina Ministerial Alliance Subcommittee on Police Reform. Is that the right title? Close enough? Okay. And they overlap. There's some overlap. There's some that's distinct. So we've been working on those, and we'll get a report back to council on that within the next couple of weeks, and then we will follow up with what's left and also confer with Commissioner Leonard as we do that, since you led the process. So we've got it on the to-do list, and we are working through some of these through sort of the earlier work with AMA, but we'll make sure we get them all reviewed and done, or at least report on them.
So one of the more challenging things I've done in life was the work we did together with Auditor Griffin Belay and Constantine, sitting back there, developing the language, passionate, and then working with the community to fine-tune what we passed on March 30th, 2010. So I think, as I recall, we actually implemented the changes on September 1st, 2010. Is that correct, or did we do it at a later date?
It was basically a two-prong process. Some of the processes were the very next day, and then it was the police review board that started in the authority started in September. Those boards actually did not convene until December because there were some issues regarding the union that were resolved in December, so we proceeded at that time.
So we've had 4.5 months experience. Mm-hmm. Is that enough time for you to be able to say with any kind of empirical experience how the changes have actually affected your office's ability on a day-to-day basis to have a better set of tools to do what you're charged with, and that is to have this independent oversight of police actions and advocate on behalf of citizens who've come to you? And can you give us some general impression that you've had how that's changed your ability to do the work, or even some specific example of something that may have gone through the process?
Well, I think, I think it needs to be noted that, you know, the very next day after the ordinance was changed, we get a phone call from the police bureau, and it was, okay, let's make this happen. And there was no resistance at all, nothing but cooperation from the bureau to implement those changes, set up trainings for us to train the new members, set up trainings for the facilitators. So it has been a very smooth process, which I don't know if we could necessarily say in other places that would be the case, but it certainly has been a smooth process here. I think two of the most significant changes have been, and it's kind of a nuanced change, but in the past, if the Bureau were to see that there were a problem and want to open up a case, if it involved a community member, they would still categorize it as a Bureau case, and that would prevent the community member from appealing, as well as it would have our role be basically at the pleasure of the Bureau. And because that is now changed, because any case involving a community member, we are at the table expected to be, well, actually any case at all, we're at the table. But I think the reducing that barrier to the community member having to have a different set of rights and then have to file their own complaint, it was a very confusing, cumbersome process that was an unnecessary barrier. And I think that's one of the most significant changes, is that it's just very clean now. If it only involves Bureau members, it's a Bureau case. If it involves a community member, it's a community case. It doesn't matter which house it originated in. And I think that that's been a really good change. And it's also kind of just changed the culture of there being an expectation, no matter who the case involves, IPR is involved. And so I think that's a pretty significant change. Being a voting member of the Police Review Board, I'll tell you, it is a very different thing to be a voting member than to be an observer. I really believe that the parity on the board has been really good for the board. It used to be 3 assistant chiefs. Now it's just 1. And then also, interestingly, sometimes that assistant chief position is filled by the director of services, which is Director Kuykendall. So we actually end up having 3 civilians on the board, civilians actually outnumber police. And so I think that has been an interesting change. I think the facilitator issue has had some growing pains, but I think in the end it's going to be a good process. I think it helps have everyone in the room feel more equal and has encouraged conversation. So those are some of the highlights that I would say since the ordinance change.
And then, of course, the whole point of oversight is to change the culture of an organization. Mm-hmm. If that needs happening, do you see any of those changes, or is it too early to say it, actually affecting the day-to-day operations of officers on the street and how they interact with the community?
You know, I'll tell you, I think that being a voting member on the board, so I'm much freer, even though I talked when I probably wasn't supposed to as an observer, but now I have the authority to talk and weigh in, and so it's a little different. I'll tell you, it's changed the relationship I've had with the peer officers. I think they see us as more approachable and reasonable than maybe they did in the past. I think we're able to have more of a dialogue, and I'm hoping that that filters back out. I hope that the sergeants go back and say, hey, you know, I was on this board with Constantine, and he really understood, or I was on this board with Mary Beth, and, you know, she didn't, you know, she wasn't as scary as they said she was, or, you know, so I think that it's really improved the
relationship. Or maybe they said she was, too.
Maybe they said she was, you know, that's true. But I think it's really improved. I think people understand IPR more, and I think there's a lot of ways that we can do that, and one of them is kind of having that one-on-one interaction. And same with the citizens that are on that board. I think that the citizens, a lot of them came back, and if you remember, part of the ordinance was that we changed who chose those people, right? And we had the auditor choose those, recommend those to council to approve. And I think that there was some hard feelings with some of the pool that we thought that they weren't qualified, or that there was a problem with them, when clearly it was just a perception of fairness that, you know, council should appoint the people that are on the board rather than the chief. And I think that we've done a lot to repair that relationship, too, with the citizens, in the same way that we've encouraged a better relationship with the officers. So I think it's been a good process.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How many people have signed up?
We have two signed up.
Okay.
Dan Handelman and Debbie Iona.
Hi, welcome back. Mr. Handelman, do you want to begin?
Sure, I can do that. Good morning. I was wondering if I might have a minute or two of extra time, since we're the only two people in the city that read this report from cover to cover.
You can have 5 minutes.
That's very nice of you. Thank you very much, Ms. Mayor. I am Dan Handelman. I'm with the group Portland Cop Watch, and we have looked at the IPR's annual report from 2010. In general, the report continues a more neutral tone that was adopted in 2009. It organizes itself in a slightly more logical way. It continues to include useful anecdotal examples, but leaves up to the reader much of the work comparing the past to the present and finding further information. In a year that included a huge upswing in police shootings, changes in the chief's office and the police union, and massive settlements going out to people abused at the hands of police, the report is quite muted in its observations of being the city's oversight body. It should also be noted that IPR opens a report touting the changes made to the ordinance last March we just talked about, but only briefly mentioning the stakeholder report that had made 41 recommendations, and I'm glad to hear the mayor's office is looking at that, because we you don't mistake the lack of people being here for lack of interest in the IPR. It is 10 o'clock on a work day. I know that there are a lot of people who are very interested in seeing the further changes go through, particularly to the Citizen Review Committee. So what's in the report? Last year, if you read it carefully, was the third year in a row and the eighth of 9 years the IPR has existed that no disparate treatment or racial profiling complaints were found out of policy. Only one such allegation has ever been sustained in 2007. In addition, African Americans continue to make up 20% of complainants in a city that is 6% black. While 62 allegations of excessive force were filed, only three of those, or 4.8%, were sustained. IPR and Internal Affairs collectively dismissed or declined to investigate 75% of incoming complaints, which is up from 71% last year. And Internal Affairs only investigated 28 community cases, which is about 8% of all the cases that came in, meaning somebody who files with the IPR only has a 1 in 13 chance of having his or her complaint actually investigated. And I should not hesitate to point out that when they get investigated, they're investigated by the Police Internal Affairs Division, not by what they think is the independent agency that took their complaint in the first place. IPR has still never done an independent investigation, even though they continue to list that up front as one of their powers. They have never done one since 2002 when they were created. IPR is now dismissing cases when they believe the investigation will not lead to proof that misconduct occurred. Of the cases dismissed by IPR, 45% had no misconduct alleged, and 18%, or about 1 in 5, fit their new cannot prove misconduct category. So we referred to this new reason, which is not actually listed in the ordinance as a reason they can dismiss complaints, as a form of clairvoyance. IPR also has thrown aside, and you probably hear about this from my colleague in the League of Women Voters, the opinions of people who have used their complaint system. They used to take in surveys from people who actually use the system. Now they're only publishing data from the auditor's citywide survey, which still doesn't show IPR in a very good light. Only 34% said they approve of IPR, but you're asking a pool of a million people about a system that only about 400 people a year use. And it seems to me that you get better data from the people who actually use the system than from the general public. The Citizen Review Committee is, you know, I'm glad that Mr. Bissonnette was here to talk a little bit about what they did. This summary of the annual report has a very short listing of some of the things CRC did, but it fails to list some of the important work they did, which was they heard appeals, which is one of the most important windows into how the Bureau works, and they challenged 5 allegations, including 1 sustained allegation, that the Bureau accepted. And that's a very big deal. That's what the citizens of Portland count on the Citizen Review Committee to do, just to challenge those appealed complaints. They presented 3 reports to City Council. Actually, Mr. Bissonnette left off the bias-based policing, and they actually have 8 work groups which are functioning. So they do a lot more than what you'd see from in here. And, you know, while outreach has improved from the IPR and they're going out and making a lot of connection with the community, I don't know that listing the names of the organizations that they were working with is as important as hearing what the community was feeding back to them. And that's something that they just started doing after the annual report came out. So we did bring that to their attention, and the IPR was responsive, and I want to give them credit for that. We do have a longer version of this analysis that I've handed you that's 7 pages long. It's up on our website. I have printed copies here, but I've given you this short short version today. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask.
Thank you. Ms. Debbie?
Hi. I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League appreciates the IPR's commitment to producing another timely annual report that is informative and neutral in tone. There were a number of changes made in 2010 to our already complicated police oversight system. The annual report contains a helpful and comprehensive accounting of those changes and a step-by-step explanation of how a complaint works its way through the system. A number of the items we asked last year to have reinstated were included in the current report, which we appreciate. This year's report raised some issues that deserve further consideration. One of the reasons IPR dismisses community complaints is the inability to identify the officer. In spite of the fact that officers now are required to hand out business cards, the rate at which cases were dismissed for this reason increased from 7% in 2009 to 12% in 2010. This may indicate a need for more training in the business card policy. In 2010, only 19 full investigations of community complaints were completed. This is a significant drop from the 4 previous years, when totals ranged from 36 to 59. With so few investigations completed, it is easier to understand why it has been a year since the last appeal hearing came before the CRC. Chief Reese's letter to the Police Oversight Stakeholder Committee states that the Internal Affairs Findings cover sheet now includes possible additional recommendations of training, policy, and/or supervision review. When authorized individuals make any of those recommendations, they should be captured in future annual reports alongside the data on findings. Furthermore, the League urges the Bureau to return to its original findings, unfounded, exonerated, insufficient evidence, and sustained. They are the standard in the field, and insufficient evidence better describes instances in which there is not enough evidence to determine if the incident occurred as described by the complainant. The officer-involved shootings investigation chart would be more useful to the public if the names of individuals and more specifics about IPR involvement were included. This year, information on the satisfaction level of community members using the system was omitted. Furthermore, we learned at the last CRC meeting that surveys no longer are mailed to complainants. At the same time, community complaints continue to decline, and the outreach coordinator reports that some are reluctant to file a complaint because they fear police retaliation. These reasons highlight the importance of finding an acceptable method of surveying complainants and also those who have had police encounters but did not file a complaint. It may be necessary to hire an outside firm to conduct such surveys. The outreach coordinator meets regularly with community organizations and their members. IPR included a summary of public comments received at these meetings and the last director's report. This information should be added to the annual report. The summary of CRC workgroup activity would benefit from a short description of the findings and recommendations included in their completed reports with links to the website. And finally, we're happy to hear that it sounds like we're going to move forward on dealing with the recommendations from the stakeholder committee. It's been long in coming, and we look forward to participating. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thanks for your continued vigilance and advocacy on this issue. It's much appreciated. All right, so it is a presentation. Do you want a motion? Do you want it accepted by council? Or okay. So, Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
Thank you for the excellent presentation and the testimony. And it appears to me we are making steady progress. And I know that the all those who are working on this are conscientious and of good faith. So thank you. Aye.
Salzman.
Well, thank you for the good report. I'm encouraged by some of the trends we see about declining complaints about use of force and complaints about police officers in general. I think that's good. Our officer-involved shootings are not good. That's something we need to be working on. But I know the CRC and the IPR offices and our advocates out there who closely monitor this are going to help us to make sure these trends continue, except for officer-involved shootings, which we hope will go down. But this is a good report, and I appreciate the professionalism shown by the staff of the IPR and the good quality work shown in this annual report. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Auditor Griffin Villade and Director Mary Beth Baptista, for your good work on this, and to the Citizens Review Committee, who provides additional oversight. It's greatly appreciated. Rochelle Silver is my liaison, and she has done an amazing job of keeping me informed and up to date on the work being done. I think it's worth calling out that the Portland Police Bureau took corrective action against 29 officers as a result of complaints in 2010. Three officers were fired, five resigned or retired with an investigation pending, and 13 officers were suspended without pay. There's sometimes a myth in the community that nothing is done in response to the complaints, and I think this report shows exactly what has been done and what has not been done. I appreciate Dan Handelman, the League of Women Voters, weighing in and giving us their expert advice and taking the time to look through the entire report. There were six officer-involved shootings in 2010, and most of these involved people experiencing mental illnesses. The mayor has assigned me to work with Cascadia Mental Health, with the sheriff's office, with the Multnomah County Crisis Line, and various other partners to look at how can we better provide mental health services in the community so that police officers aren't the first responders. It's a three-year project. We're making a lot of good progress, as evidenced by a revised police policy that encourages officers. They already respond to a sergeant when they're responding to a person in crisis to decide what the next course of action should be when somebody is stating that they want to commit suicide or to be killed by police. recently they've had several successes with what they call the step back technique, where instead of having the officer go in to try to take control, they give the person more time to be able to come to the realization that they need help rather than they need the police to take action. And so that's an example of how we're revising the whole system. And indeed, this council is funding mental health crisis services through Project Respond so that we do have mental health professionals responding to people experiencing mental illnesses on our streets rather than expecting our police officers to do that job as first responders.